Okay, and we're still dealing with our Full Moon Friday open lines. You're next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to east of the Rockies, Seneca, Missouri. Matt, how are you?
Doing pretty good. George, how are you doing?
Okay, not bad.
Hey, what I come to talk to you about is I drive all night. Tonight I'm off work, but I drive around. I see things. I watch things going on, but I service an area down the east of Seneca, of Fort Crowder in Neosho, Missouri.
Sure.
And that fort's been closed. Well, not really closed down, but skeleton force. And over a period of the last couple of years, they've been rebuilding that, and no one's really talking about it too much. But they've put new barracks up. New phone banks have gone in along the edges of the barracks and the different buildings. And it's, everything's been really quiet. Well, with everything else going on lately, I'm also an avid shooter. I like to hang out at a couple of gun shops. And
I do that, too. I do that, too.
Yeah. A gentleman I never saw before, I never met, he came in and we struck up a conversation. He's being called back to full-time duty in the Guard. I guess they're putting a brigade together, and they're setting them up in Springfield, Missouri, is where he's going. And I asked him, I said, well, what are they putting a brigade in, you know, a full-time brigade station in Springfield for? He said, well, they're getting ready for civil unrest.
That is amazing. It's happening, Matt. It's happening all around the country.
Yeah, I live here, and there's no more civil unrest here than there is anywhere else. Everybody's,
I mean, what do they know we don't know?
He said it's because of the, they told him it's because of the economy. Everybody around here, we're not getting hit so bad in the economy. I mean, we're getting hit, but not, you know, there's some people going out of work, but it's not as bad as it is. Like, I'm from the Joliet area originally, and, you know, they're getting hit a little harder because of manufacturing jobs.
Oh, yeah, and next year they say it could be worse.
Yeah. I'd say, what are they doing? And there are more and more people, military, are showing up in this area. Now, Fort Crowder, I was told, I haven't had a chance to look this up. I guess it was a concentration camp during World War II where they kept Japanese Americans or German Americans. I'm not sure.
And have you talked to anybody at these gun shops? You know what they're going to tell you? Gun sales are going through the roof right now.
Oh, yes.
Legal gun sales, obviously, but they're going through the roof.
A lot of the weapons of choice, a lot of your assault weapons are double the price they were a month ago.
Ammo is going through the roof.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. Even reloading supplies is double compared to what it used to be.
We had a alderman here in St. Louis who has simply told people, carry your own arms. This is a right to carry state. Mm-hmm. And they said, protect yourself. That came from an alderman. I mean, I never thought I'd hear that.
Yeah, it's like that across the nation. I just recently moved here from Oklahoma, 8 miles away. I live right here in the Spooklight area, drive down the road every day. You know, the whole area here, everything's still pretty easy, but the further I get out west, I've been through Colorado, New Mexico, and so forth. It's unbelievable. The
people, it's tense.
Yeah, the people in rural areas are really, you know, watching to see what happens. But that's,
yeah, it's tense.
You're like, no, they are. It's different over there, that fort. You'll see a couple buses pull in and never see any of the troops. Like I said, I'm a garbage man. The garbage cans are all full, but you never see anybody.
That is bizarre. Matt, thanks for that. And it's happening all around the country. And we're going to keep on the cutting edge of this because I don't think anybody else is talking about it. Let's go to Minnesota. David, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Dave.
Hey there. Good evening.
What's up in Minnesota? It's got to be cold there.
Well, it's getting there. We're expecting a snowstorm this weekend, I guess.
It's not like the old days, though. I lived in Minneapolis back in 1978-79, and, man, it was cold then. But I don't think it's been as cold as it normally has been.
No, it hasn't. We've been skating by for the last, I don't know, 10 years at least, and, you know, it's just not what it used to be. But, you know, everybody else, you know, down in Louisiana.
Yeah.
I don't know, they beg to differ, but anyway, I called you a couple of years ago about the idea I've been carrying around about a Live Aid movie, and it was another Full Moon Friday a couple of years ago. But
you seem to get in on Full Moon Fridays, David.
I know. I don't know. I think there's some synchronicity going on because I haven't really had had much problem getting on. But anyway, I've been sending emails and letters out to, out to Hollywood and to Bono, and, I've just been getting the silence treatment, and I guess I can understand, because they just get inundated with all kinds of stuff, and, bizarre ideas is just, not up their alley. But one of the problems I run up against is that I don't know anybody out there, really, and when I send them I sent them a short story with that kind of integrated world Eastern mythologies with Christianity and that incorporates reincarnation and sort of follows the incarnations of King David. I heard you refer to King David in an earlier call, and I think this is a time when that archetype might be coming to the surface in our subconscious. And anyway, I thought it would be kind of a cool idea if we kind of followed the lives and the incarnations of somebody like King David from, like, the beginning of time through modern times. And I put a short story together, and I sent it out to Hollywood, and, of course, they say, well, we can't accept it because it's unsolicited material, and basically I have to hire an attorney or an agent, which is basically the same as an attorney, I guess, and somehow get some kind of an audience or be able to make a pitch to somebody in Hollywood. But anyway, I thought, with the people that listen to your show, somebody might be in a position to be able to take this idea to the hoop. Hint, hint.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, I thought the idea, had some merit to it. And there's a lot of synchronicities. I ran into one of your guests. I don't know if you remember interviewing a woman named Solara.
Sure do.
I ran into her down in Arizona before she had any really notoriety. She had written a couple of books, and I was introduced to her down there by a woman that I've been with for the last 18 years. And anyway, I related this experience I had in February of 1989, and where I was up in Anchorage, Alaska, and I just started feeling these earth tremors, and nobody else was feeling. And I thought, well, geez, maybe I'm getting psychic or something.
And when you say feeling it, like feeling like from the ground or something in your head?
Well, it was as if I was on the ocean, and I was feeling these ocean swells, and then every so often it would kind of lurch from side to side, and I thought, well, geez, that's, And the temperature is like 20 below zero out, and I had been talking to my neighbor lady, who was in her 70s, and she went through the 64 earthquake. And I'm thinking, oh, geez, if we have a major quake, this place is going to be like a morgue in a matter of days. You lose your gas lines and electricity, and people are burning their furniture to keep warm. And
yep. Yep.
So anyway, I went out and I started buying canned foods, and I went to the Army-Navy surplus and was buying Army tents and wood stoves and just loading up the pickup. And, they're all looking at me like, yeah, are you okay? And I said, yeah, I'm fine. I'm just feeling earth tremors, but that's that. And anyway, a friend of mine was staying with me, and he sees me putting this stuff in the living room. And his dad used to be a psychiatrist. And, he says, well, Dave, I really think you ought to see somebody. I said, well, gee, thanks, but I'm a little busy right now, So I'm going about my business, and then about 2 hours later, these cops show up on my doorstep.
And you mean he called them? He called them?
He called somebody. He called, either the mental hospital or the cops. And so so they're on my doorstep asking me questions, and they say, well, are you feeling all right? I said, well, yeah, I'm all right, And they said, well, if you need any help, can we do anything? I said, well, if you wouldn't mind, you could give me a lift to the filling station to help me get some kerosene. And of course, that was the wrong thing to say. So pretty right then, you know, my hands are behind my back, and I was in handcuffs. And
they put you in handcuffs?
Absolutely. You know, it's their policy. You know, when they pick somebody up, you know, to take them away, they put them in handcuffs in the back seat. My next door neighbor lady, the lady that, you know, I had been talking to about the earthquakes about, you know, she comes out. This is like 10 o'clock at night, and she looks in the back seat. Do they have you in handcuffs? And I said, don't worry, Mrs. B. You know, why don't you go to the, you know, store and get a six pack, and I'll be back in a couple hours. And she just couldn't believe that they were taking me off. So, of course, it ended up with 3 days in a mental hospital. And I used to fly airplanes for a living. This was a small airplane pilot up there, and it's like, you know, my career was just amputated in a matter of seconds.
And, I mean, that's on your record now, Dave, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And I finally got my medical reinstated. I had to take the psychiatric evaluation and the ink blots and everything, and of course, you know, it comes back, well, he's self-centered and narcissistic and suicidal, and I'm going, yeah, right. And so anyway,
what lesson did you learn from this, Dave?
Well,
not to tell anybody what you think.
I guess so. But at the time, I was kind of in an altered state because I had been going through an emotional cleansing, kind of a Zen approach to life, and I just started dwelling or contemplating the omnipresence of God.
Well, you know, David, sometimes it's better just to keep some of these things to yourself because you just never know how they're going to react. I'm sure your friend thought he was doing the best thing for you when he called the police and they showed up because, God forbid, had anything happen, he probably would have kicked himself for a long time. Let me take a few more calls before the break. Let's go to Hilo, Hawaii. First-time caller. Hi there.
Hey, Brother George. How you doing?
Good. Mark, what's up?
I just wanted to thank you first for all the for keeping me company while I'm here burning the midnight oil at night at work every night. So,
absolutely.
Your show is makes the time go fast. I really appreciate it.
Even if you don't believe in giants, right?
Hey, you know, there's a lot of things out there I don't know about, so
yeah,
that's the fun
exactly.
part of it. I want to run something past you real quick. Kind of look at the government these days and kind of have some concerns about it, and I kind of think, you know, long and hard about it, and I think what we need is maybe a good old-fashioned grassroots effort, and I think, you know, coast to coast, that's the first place I think about, because, you know, everybody has the right to put their two cents in at coast to coast, and that's what I like about the show.
We are going to continue to pound away at all this. I mean, we're not going to go away, and we're not going to quiet down. And you know, they're listening to us, Mark, out there. I mean, they are listening intently every night to what we say and what you say. And you know, I think it's going to make some change eventually.
Well, I hope so. But I think, you know, how's the change going to happen? And my idea is this. And I'd like to hear what you think about it. Is
all right.
That, you know, the folks in Washington are never going to put in term limits. And when they go there, you know, they're supposed to be representative of the people, but they're representing the people who put them back in office and give them the power and the money, and that's what they're going there for.
Yep.
We all know that. And I think, well, how do we change that dynamic? And what I think is, you know, they've got us all running around like heads with our chickens cut off to make ends meet, and we have time to pay attention as much as we'd like to, and get into the political, you know, machine as much as we'd like to. So what I'm thinking is we need to change the dynamic of who's going to Washington. And that the best way I can think to do that is, you know, right now I'm like 90-something percent of people get reelected. And I think we got to change that. So if we can get that down to 49%, then the odds are when you get elected to the federal office, you're probably not going to go back the next time.
I am all in favor of term limits for everybody who runs, and we need to do that because we create, man, institutions. We really do, and it's not, you know, it's not good government. It really isn't. Even though somebody may do a bang-up job as a congressman or a senator, you know what? It's refreshing to just, you know, let's make the change. West of the Rockies, Corey in Jackson, Wyoming. Take it away, Corey.
Hey, I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
All right.
Yeah, it's full moon Friday, and I told my wife, I said, I'm going to go do a full moon, and she told me to keep my pants up.
You don't want to get tossed out for that, Corey.
Yeah. Anyway, I was telling about actually a couple things. First of all, the I don't know, you might have mentioned it, and I might have missed it, that they were talking about, I think it was in Indonesia, about chipping HIV patients. Sexually
yes.
aggressive.
Yes.
So that's the start of it. And on the pyramids, I'm a firm believer in the Bible and in Bible prophecy. But when man was initially created, we were created perfect. We weren't created to die or get sick or any of that until, as the story goes, Adam and Eve sinned. But at that point, we were much more intelligent than we are actually now. And the pyramids, I don't think we'll ever truly understand, because we don't have that kind of intelligence they had, the innovativeness they had.
There was a genius behind the pyramids that we do not comprehend or understand.
I'm a firm believer that they were man-made, but they just had a concept and an intelligence and a creativity that we just can't fathom in today's technological age, where we really think less and less for ourselves. I just wanted to throw that out there. I hadn't heard anybody ever talk about that aspect.
I mean, they may have understood, Corey, you know, the fact that maybe sound could move these blocks. I mean, they may have known about things like that that we can't. Very possible. Very possible indeed. Time for another call. Let's go to Texas. Hey, George, how are you?
Yeah, George?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, it's an honor to talk to you. I had an encounter with a hat man about 6 years ago.
Shadow hat man?
It was real. I mean, I was looking at him. You know, he was standing over my bed, you know. About 8:30 one night, I laid down for a while, and about 9:30, I woke up. I had the radio, you know, it was kind of buzzing, and my CC radio, and and I reached up to redial it, and through my peripheral vision, I could see something off to the right, and I looked to the right real quick, and there he was, standing right over my bed.
And this wasn't a shadow. This was like an actual physical person.
This was real. I mean, you know, real, you know. And he had his hat on. He had a long overcoat on. I never saw his face. I never saw his eyes. And all of a sudden, of course, I was just frozen, you know.
Oh, yeah. Who wouldn't be?
You know, I'll be 60 years old here in a couple weeks, you know. And it was the scariest thing that I'd ever encountered.
How did it go away, George?
Well, he was standing there, and I was really getting upset, and but I couldn't do anything. And all of a sudden, he bent over. He bent right over like he was getting up in my face. And then he stood back up, and, you know, things are going through your mind second at a time. And I said real quick to myself, he won't do that again for some reason. And he did it again.
And poof, off he went. This Wednesday, by the way, Linda Moulton House special report that she normally does the last Thursday of the month, but because of the holidays, we've moved her up. So she'll be on Wednesday, by the way, so make that little program note. We'll be back. A while back, I had a chance to speak with singer-actress-turned-spiritual advisor Helen Reddy, who discussed her life and exploration of higher consciousness with me. Helen was the first Australian to win a Grammy Award and to have 3 number one hits in the same year. She retired from her musical career. She's now a clinical hypnotherapist and spiritual teacher, and brings a message of strength, spiritual growth, and higher consciousness. Helen, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. George, how are you?
Good. This is indeed a pleasure for me. I've admired your work for a long time.
Well, thank you. It's great to be on the show.
How did you make this switch, this change from best-known recording artist, which you are, into this area of being a spiritual teacher?
It was something, I guess, that was in my heart for a long time because I wanted to be a missionary when I was a child. And I had an out-of-body experience when I was 11, which certainly changed my life, because at that point there was no question but that I was a soul inside a body. And that was sort of the beginning, I guess, of my spiritual search. And I've been interested in metaphysical subjects, well, all my life. You know, I've studied them for over 50 years, and hypnosis was something that I first got involved with in my teens, but I didn't go back to college and get my degree until I was 60.
Helen, the same thing happened to me when I was 11 years old. I had my first OBE. I've never been able to duplicate it, but that too had a profound effect on me and kind of pushed me in the direction that I've gone all my life. A dear friend of mine, Bruce Goldberg, Dr. Bruce Goldberg, also is a hypnotherapist, and I've had an opportunity to watch his work. Just amazing to do this. Now, when you do this, are you doing this to see if there are past lives, or are you doing it for other reasons?
Well, it depends. It depends what the client wants. You know, sometimes family members who have passed over come through and they communicate with each other. Sometimes they'll go to past lives, but sometimes I'm just working on something in their current life. I had, I've been having some strange experiences lately. A few weeks ago, I had a client referred to me. She was young doctor, Vietnamese, and she'd been recommended by a psychologist that we both knew, and she had a phobia that was interfering with her practice and her life. And so, you know, I didn't know what she had something I'd never even heard of, much less dealt with before, but I did my homework, and I thought, well, and I was given a lot of encouragement by other, you know, hypnotherapist friends. So anyway, we knocked the phobia right out of the ballpark, but she then proceeded to tell me that, you know, there was this figure walking towards her, this male figure, and I said, well, tell me when you recognize him, and then all of a sudden she said, it's Jesus. I said, what? She said, it's Jesus. She said, what's he doing here? I don't believe in him. She's a Buddhist. You see, she's been, you know, raised in an Asian culture.
Condition.
And, yes, so it was very weird. And she was, she said that he was talking to her, but she couldn't hear what he was saying. She could see that his lips were moving, but that she couldn't hear. And I thought maybe there's too much background noise in the room we were in, or, you know. But I think, thinking about it later, I think it was her fear and her guilt and her shame, because she kept saying over and over again, I hope he doesn't know all the terrible things I've said about him.
Go ahead, Helen.
No, and then she told me later, you know, when she'd come out of it and we were discussing it, she said, you know, before I met and married my husband, she's married to another Asian doctor, she said, I was with a man for 7 years who really pushed Christianity down my throat. And so I was really turned off any idea of Christianity. She said, I don't understand why this has happened. And I said, well, you know, I don't really either, but it's happened, you know. So, and then 8 days later, I did a regression for a man, Greek. He was just visiting Australia. And he went, oh, this is really weird, George. I hope you're sitting down.
Oh, I'm sitting down. Most of the time I stand when I do the show, but right now you got me sitting down.
Okay. So he, you know, he wanted a past life regression. So I took him to, you know, a place where that's possible. And he opens the door and he walks into the room and he says, the room's full of hay. And there's animals here. He said, there's a baby about to be born. And I'm thinking, oh, no. Oh, no. And then he said, and there's people in the room. There's other people, but they're talking in a language that I can't understand. I said, but where are you? He said, the Middle East. Now, I can't quite remember the order of questions that I asked him. You know, when you're doing this kind of work, George, it's like you're in a room with somebody who's on the phone, and you're only getting their end of the conversation. But if you want to find out what else is going on, you kind of have to interrupt the flow. So it's difficult to know when to interject yourself and when not. But anyway, I said, where are you? No, I said, have you come very far? He said, yes, I've come a very long way, and the journey was very hard, and I'm very old, and I'm very tired. And I said, why are you there? And he said, well, this has been, what was the word he used? Expected. This has been expected. He said, all my life I've been waiting for this event to happen.
It sounds like he was one of the three wise men.
Well, at that point, I said, what's your name? And in a deeper voice, a voice that was different from his own, he said, Melchior.
Uh-huh.
And he told me later when he came out of it that he thought he was from Persia. But anyway, he's there. He's in this room with the hay and the animals and all these people, and the baby's about to be born. Now, I'm here in Sydney. Now, this is happening about lunchtime, okay?
Right.
And that day, around that time, we had a tremendous thunderstorm, lightning and thunder. And as he says the baby is being born, there is this loud crack of thunder and lightning, what have you. And then he starts crying. And the tears are running down his face. He is so moved. But he's still, the subject himself still has not put together who he is and what's going on. So I said to him, what's the baby's name? He said, well, I don't know. I said, ask the father. He says, well, I can't communicate with him because we have this language difficulty. And then he suddenly says, it's the baby Jesus.
Oh, my.
And he's absolutely dumbstruck. And he looks at the mother and he says, it's the Virgin Mary. And he said that she looked at him and telepathically communicated that she was glad that he was there. And then he looked at the baby, and the baby smiled, and the room suddenly filled with light. Not my room, the room he is in.
Right.
Okay. And he's very emotional. I mean, the tears are just streaming down his face, and he's in a state of bliss. And I've been there, so I just kind of let him be and have that time. And then after I don't know how long it was, he said, I need to go outside and be by myself. I need to pray. And as he was leaving the room, he said, this is a manger. That's what this is. This is a manger. And then he went outside and he knelt down and looked up at the stars and gave thanks that the prophecy had been fulfilled and that he had lived to see that. And then he said he was so tired that he just lay down on the ground and fell asleep. And the next thing he was looking at himself, and he said, I think I've died. And he had. And you know, when we were talking about it afterwards, I think that, well, first of all, his life purpose had been fulfilled. That was what he'd been hanging on for. Oh, I left something out. I had asked him, I said, what do you do? And that was very puzzling.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't say there's no modern equivalent. I can't remember the exact words he used, but there was no modern term that described what he did. He said, well, I'm very old. He said, many people think of me as being a wise man, and they come to me and they consult with me. That was the point at which I asked him what his name was.
When you when you attempt the hypnotherapy with these clients, with these individuals, yes, do you try to get them to come to the realization of who they might be or what they might be, or do you try to interpret that for them?
No. I stay out of it. I stay out of it. I don't want to lead them in any way. I mean, if I'm asking a question, it's to clarify.
All right.
But I think not only had his life's purpose been fulfilled, but that he was too old and too frail to make that long, hard journey back again. So that was... and then the next day, I'm doing the word scramble in the paper, and the two six-letter words that come up are anoint and infant. So I don't know what's going on, George, but we are definitely here at a very important time.
No doubt. When you wrote the book, The Woman I Am, you talk about a very special occurrence there about the bright lights on an ascending staircase.
Yes.
What happened there?
Oh, it's very hard to put into words because they just don't exist. But I had been alone in the house. I was moving and I was alone in the house, and I just had the absolute bare minimum. Most stuff had been packed and shipped, and I was sitting there watching TV, and the only light in the house was the light on the... I had this staircase that went from the living room up to the top landing, and there were identical light fixtures embedded in the ceiling, both top and bottom. Each of these light fixtures had two bulbs, and in both of them, one of the bulbs had burnt out. And I'd delayed changing them until one of them had gone completely. Then I was going to get the ladder and do the lot. And they're only like 60-watt bulbs. So I'm sitting there and I'm watching television, and all of a sudden there's this very bright light. And I get up and I go to the bottom of the stairs, and both light fixtures are glowing like there's two 150-watt light bulbs in each fixture. And it seems very strange, and I don't understand. And anyway, they stayed that way until I went to bed and I turned them off. I turned them on again the next morning when I got up, and they were back to being the way they had been, the one dead bulb and one good one. The next night, the same thing happened again. And at this point, I'm realizing that someone's trying to get in touch with me. And it just felt like there was a presence. There was a very strong presence and a feeling of overwhelming unconditional love. I mean, I have never felt so loved in all my life as I did that night. It was just amazing. And, you know, I knew I wanted to get out of show business. I knew I wanted to do other things with my life, but sure, I didn't know exactly how or why or where. And anyway, I was sort of told that I needed to write a book, which I have done, and that I also needed to travel and speak, and to speak about spiritual matters, which is what I am now doing.
It's your calling. And do you miss the entertainment area anymore?
No.
No.
No, I did it for 50 years, you know.
Yeah,
from the time I was 5 years old to the time I was 60, that's a long time. And, you know, I wanted to do other things. I wanted to move on.
Helen, when that song came out in 72, I Am Woman, how did that come about? Did you write it? Did you have a staff that wrote that for you? And did you think it was going to be an instant hit?
No. I wrote the lyrics, and it was, I'd been involved in the women's movement for about 9 months, I guess, and I'd always had feminist leanings, but I always thought I was alone. And so it was a huge shift in consciousness to realize that other women, you know, were feeling the same way. And I was getting ready to do my first album, and so many of the songs were all about women being weak and helpless and how their men treated them badly, but wasn't it wonderful, you know? So the song that I was looking for didn't exist. I mean, I felt that the women in my family were so strong. They were the ones who'd kept everything together during two world wars and a depression. These were strong women. And so I wanted a song that addressed that strength. And I realized I had to write it myself. So that was the genesis. And no, I had no idea it would finish up in the history books.
Oh, my God, it was huge. I mean, huge. And everybody still remembers it. I mean, and they hum it. It's just one of those
songs. It is literally in the history books, in the modern American history textbooks in high schools.
I never knew I had Martians in my garden, and I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people, and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware, but now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid, but as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, 'cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Good morning or good evening. Your voice is always welcome here on my radio. Go in with your space transmitter or your telephone. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light.